These are the stories that you need to know about today. Iran under attack, not by NATO or U.S. missiles, not yet. It is under attack in a different way, and it's deadly. And I'm going to tell you all about it. Greenland's very survival as a sovereign state is under attack. And suddenly NATO, who has never cared about this type of thing when it happened to other countries, is outraged. And then there's NATO itself and the EU. Are they both on their last legs? It's not me saying that, by the way. It's people inside NATO itself. This is the Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and welcome to The Effect, where we emphasize reality over spin. And you know what's real? The hypocrisy that's coming out of Europe. It is so on display right now as Europe's elites cry and whine about Trump's conduct in Greenland. They have a right to complain, right? Of course. But here, that's not what I'm saying. Here's the question. Why didn't they complain about the U.S.'s behavior when it was aimed at other countries? Why didn't they complain about, you know, when this kind of thing is done to China or Iran or India or Russia? In fact, when it comes to those countries, NATO encourages it. And now, when it comes to Greenland, part of their little world, it's existential.
If the United States chooses to attack another NATO country militarily, then everything stops. That is, including our NATO, and thus the security that has been provided since the end of the Second World War.
That's Greenland's prime minister saying that if Mr. Trump does this, it's the end of NATO as we know it. And here's where her blind hypocrisy is really on full display. Because what she's saying is that when NATO attacks others, like it when it bombed Belgrade, right, for like 3 months, well, that was okay. But Greenland, off limits.
I believe in democracy, and I believe in the international rules of the game. Of course, I also believe that you do not change borders by force, either in one way or another. It is not only the position of Denmark and the Danish realm, but fortunately, Europe too. So I hope that people will also take note of the once again significant European support that we are receiving.
It's Europe's position, she says, not to intervene, not to affect other people's borders. Was that Europe's position in Iraq when NATO invaded and bombed Iraq? Was it Europe's position in Syria? How about Libya? How about what the French are doing right now, intervening along Western Africa and countries like Mali and Burkina Faso? There, France has blatantly obstructed democratic outcomes. And what has NATO done or said about that? Nothing. Nada. Yet. But now, Trump says something about taking over Greenland, like this.
I'm not talking about money for Greenland yet. I might talk about that. But right now, we are going to do something on Greenland, whether they like it or not. I would like to make a deal, you know, the easy way. But if we don't do it the easy way, we're going to do it the hard way.
Yeah, we're going to go in. We're going to do it the hard way, he says. And that's causing Europe to freak out. And look, again, I get the outrage. But how is what Trump says now about Greenland different than from what NATO actually did in places like the Middle East, in Africa? How about the coup that NATO fomented in Ukraine in 2014? That's not intervening. So here's the real question about Trump's threat. Why is it acceptable, even celebrated, when other nations are made to feel existential fear, but suddenly it's immoral, it's reckless, it's dangerous when Europe is made to feel existential threat? Think about that. For years, NATO elites and European leaders have applauded, even joined in, when the United States applied pressure on China and Russia, Iran, Venezuela, even India recently with the tariffs. Sanctions, encirclement, economic warfare, military threats. It's all justified under one sacred phrase, national security. Here's Trump, for example, doing Israel's bidding on Iran. This was back during his first term.
The United States will immediately impose additional punishing economic sanctions on the Iranian regime. These powerful sanctions will remain until Iran changes its behavior.
What did NATO and the EU do back then when Trump was threatening Iran? Nothing. In fact, when Trump went even further in 2020 and actually assassinated Iran's top military leader with a missile, Qasem Soleimani, what was NATO's reaction? It said, quote, "We stand with Donald Trump." That's what Stoltenberg, the NATO chief, said at the time. You see what I mean? When it's somebody else under attack or even being pushed toward collapse, NATO says it's okay. NATO says it's even necessary. But when Trump threatens Greenland, all hell breaks loose. Suddenly, Trump's threats are an outrage. Suddenly, France's Emmanuel Macron, who leads one of the most neo-colonialist countries in the entire planet, he's now coming out against, you're not going to get, this is too much. He is coming out against neo-colonialism.
I even believe that there is currently a process openly embraced by some of recolonization. Fundamentally, we have found ourselves caught in a very strange game, where we, French and Europeans, are subjected to anti-colonial rhetoric that no longer corresponds to realities, to our practices, and we are subjected to neo-colonial aggression from some. I'm telling you that there's utter chaos. The law of the strongest prevails. And every day, people wonder if Greenland will be invaded, if Canada will be threatened with becoming the 51st state, or if Taiwan will be further encircled.
Crime on a Sunday, Batman? I'm shocked. I mean, can you believe this guy? So, you know what this tells us? This isn't about Greenland. This story's not about Greenland. It's about a vaulted sense of status, a sense that Europe's elites have a right to be treated differently than the rest of the world because they think they're better. Existential fear is something they're supposed to give out. They're not supposed to get it. So when Russia feels encircled, tough. When China says or feels contained, tough. Iran, it's allowed to feel strangled. And Latin America, well, these little brown people like me, we need to be managed by the white Europeans. But Europe itself, no. It needs to be exempt from any of these things until they aren't. And Trump seems crazy enough to not care. He doesn't care. He's been consistent in seeming to not give a damn about NATO, which could lead to the end of NATO, because to him, it's just another client. He calls them basically a paying customer.
I did the same thing with NATO. I got them to pay up. NATO was busted until I came along. I said, everybody's going to pay. They said, well, if we don't pay, are you still going to protect us? I said, absolutely not.
Nope, I would not, he says. I would not. Absolutely not. He says he feels no compunction to defend NATO. That wasn't a joke. That was a warning. And let's talk about the EU now. NATO's partner, right? The EU survives on moral authority that it no longer applies consistently. You cannot cheer existential pressure when it's imposed on your rivals and then claim outrage when it reaches you. You see, that's not principle. You know what that is? You know what that is? It's privilege. Let's talk about Iran now. A country in the midst of an all-out assault by the West. Israel's Mossad, along with the CIA and likely the British MI6 intel services, have been fomenting. In fact, we've got pictures. Look at this. Fomenting anti-government disturbances inside Iran so that they can later come in and say, look, we need to help the people of Iran because they're protesting against their country. And that's why we're now going to bomb Iran. It's interesting how you can create these kinds of scenes, huh? It's not the first time we've seen this. And how did they do it? Well, let me take you through it. First, they purposely manipulated Iran's currency, which they've been doing for years. And that did cause legitimate protests from many people in the business community in Iran, small business people who all of a sudden saw the value of their currency go up like 40%. But then, According to Iran's foreign minister, who you're about to hear, they recruited people to infiltrate these protests. Those infiltrators were actually recorded on tape, according to the foreign minister, receiving their orders.
We have witnessed the entry of terrorists, agents and groups onto the protest scene. It is clear that there were plots to misdirect the protests from their main purpose, to make them violent, to cause bloodshed and chaos on national level. We have recorded voice messages sent from outside of the country to such terrorist agents. They're saying, shoot while you're among the protesters. If you can, shoot the police. If not, shoot ordinary people. Shoot the girl or boy directly in front of you. Those terrorist agents are using ISIS tactics. They're doing things that are difficult to speak about. They beheaded police officers. They burned some individuals to death. We have proof of this. We have documents that indicate the involvement of both the United States and Israel in these terrorist attacks.
Now, I'm not sure about the exact characterization that he's framing, but I can tell you this, I've checked. Credible reports indicate that more than 100 police officers were killed. Iranian police officers were killed by these protesters. And maybe another 100 civilians were also killed. And the proof that these infiltrators were receiving orders comes in the fact that as soon as Iran shut down the internet, the anti-government protests suddenly stopped cold because they couldn't get information or orders from outside. The fact that Israeli's Mossad agents were also involved, that's not just an accusation from this guy, from the foreign minister of Iran or other Iranian leaders. This is being reported right now by Israeli newspapers. They're confirming it, that the Mossad is there inside Iran. And then there's this. You're not going to believe. Look at this headline from the Jerusalem Post. Mike Pompeo, the guy who used to run the CIA, has actually tweeted the following. Listen to this. Happy New Year to Iranians and Mossad agents behind them. He's saying the quiet part out loud. He's saying that Mossad agents are inside fomenting these disturbances. And yet the media in the United States and in other places, they don't even cover this. Yes, Israel is fomenting the riots in Iran. That seems obvious. Probably with the MI6 and the CIA. Are you surprised? Shouldn't be. But here's where this gets interesting. In response to the anti-government riots, suddenly, there's this. These are pro-government demonstrators. Governments, hundreds of thousands of people who are out there in cities all across Iran, according to reports, have taken to the streets to show their support for the Iranian government. The videos are being shown all over the world. Of course, not in the United States or in the UK. But these pictures are now working against the pro-Western narrative that Iran is in chaos, that its people are trying to take down the government. So much going on. So interesting, right? To get this perspective. It's not hard. It's all out there. We've got a perfect guest to talk about these topics. Joining us live is Dennis Fritz. He's a retired United States Air Force Command Chief, Master Sergeant, author of Deadly Betrayal, The Truth About Why the United States Invaded Iraq. Mr. Fritz, thanks so much for joining us, sir. It's an honor.
Rick, thanks for having me.
I want to start with something that has just been crossing. That's certainly got my attention. The Associated Press is saying that Britain, along with the Germans and the French, are now in talks with NATO to put troops in Greenland. Apparently, they want to beef up the security of Greenland. But here's where this gets really interesting. They don't have the, shall we say, intestinal fortitude, because I know you and I would probably use a different word, to just come out and say what Trump is doing is wrong, so we're going to try and trump him by putting troops in Greenland. No, they're blaming it on Russia and China. They say they're putting, they're putting troops in Greenland to stop the Russians and the Chinese from taking over the Arctic trade routes, I guess. What do you make of that?
Rick, unfortunately, we all live in disinformation. and rhetoric. And I will tell you, it is out of fear of Trump. Because one thing about Trump, when he says he's going to do something, he says it out loud, and they're fearful that he's going to do it. But understandably, to keep NATO intact, Russia, Germany, others are going to say we're doing it in support of NATO in our defense of another NATO country against the likes of China and Russia. But we know what it's all about. I know for sure what it's all about. It is to try to trump Trump because they're fearful that he may actually do it.
Why doesn't NATO and these guys like Keir Starmer, who has 12% approval rating when I last checked, by the way, or Macron, who's at 16%, or Merz, Friedrich Merz in Germany, who's somewhere around 22 or something, and all of them are going down, by the way. Why don't these guys show some gonads? Why don't they show a little intestinal fortitude? Why don't they talk like real men talk? Is it because they're bankers? Is it because they're all bought and sold by BlackRock? I mean, they seem so feeble to me.
Rick, let me just bring it closer to home for me, and I have that same sentiment when it comes to our government here in the United States, for example. Look at our Congress. Look at, and one of the things that hit closely to me, being a retired military guy, I look at our general officers, our retired general officers. You know, where are they? And so when you mentioned the Black Rocks of the world are being bought and paid for it, that's what it's all about. It's about the dollar. You know, I'm reminded, you know, when we, you know, there's so much we can talk about as I was listening to your monologue. Wow, you hit a lot. The world is in a mess. You know, when I think about what you just said, I think about a former Major General, Smedley Butler, back in 1935, I think it was. He said, war is a racket. And that's what it's all about. It is about the bottom dollar. We can talk about Venezuela. We can talk the Middle East, which is my expertise. But all these folks are unfortunately, actually bought and paid for. You know, I tell folks I can give you assumptions, opinions, and facts. Well, Rick, you just hit a fact.
You know, and look, you and I are Americans, and we want our country to do right. And we understand. We're not dumb. You're a military guy. You understand that at times we have to do things that aren't you know, necessarily something that our mothers would like, or our priests, maybe. I get it. But the constant fomenting of lies, of interventions, of starting needless wars without explanation, and most importantly, here's what gets me. Here's what gets me, Colonel. I think it's the fact that we do things that don't, that are not done to benefit Americans. I get it if they're doing something that at least helps us, but there's nobody in Kansas or in Hialeah or in Miami or where you're from that's going to directly benefit from any of these things, as far as I can tell. And that's what frosts me a little bit.
Well, let me give you an example. Let me just make one correction, Rick, jokingly, when you said Colonel. My official title was Chief. I don't want the colonels out there, you know, getting upset. And in fact, and I don't want to be embarrassed by you calling me a colonel, because I love being a chief.
Well, thank you, sir. But, I appreciate the correction.
But with that said, though, you know, as you just mentioned, you know, let's talk about Venezuela, you know, for example, which now, you know, have the folks in Europe afraid that he will actually invade Greenland. You know, a lot of the folks I asked them, you know, one thing about Trump, when you talk about all the lies and so forth, well, his first biggest lie when you talk about Venezuela was about, it was about drugs. But let me just give you a little bit of history, Rick, how all this ties up and together. I mentioned Smedley Butler, you know, war is a racket. Now, let me just share this. When you talk about the Middle East, and when you talk about Iran, that's going on now, when you talk about Venezuela, when you talk about Greenland, all of them have one thing in common, and that is resources. Whether it be oil, whether it be minerals, Greenland, you know, they don't talk about that a lot, Greenland. Well, that's what Trump is interested in. War is a racket. And all in the United States of America, what I ask folks here, and I'll ask the world this, when you mentioned about Kansas or where I'm from right now, I said, okay, we went in and took the oil, going to take the oil out of Venezuela. Trump says that loud part, the quiet part out loud. How am I going to benefit for that? The oil magnates, the oligarchs are all going to benefit. The minerals, they're all going to benefit from that. But the common man and woman and child, we're not going to benefit from that. And so it's all about the power, getting more power and getting richer. And that, you ready for this? That's another fact.
You know,
I've seen it up and close, Rick.
I'm looking at the list here. As soon as you said that, I went to my Googles here on my laptop and I put in oil reserves by country. You talk about wars being a racket. Number one, Venezuela. Number two, Saudi Arabia. Number three, Iran. Wow. What countries are in the news right now? And I wonder, Chief, if it has something to do with this. I think it
Say
does.
It again.
I said,
yes,
I wonder.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely it does, right?
Yeah. But let me just share something else, though, Rick, when you mentioned about, you know, deadly betrayal. But not only that, though, you know, when you mentioned colonialism, you know, even the Middle East, when you talk about Israel, that's based on colonialism. You know, the Israelis that are there now, I have to be quite frank with it. They all, Ashkenazi Jews, they all came from Europe, if you will, the leaders over there. And it was a part of why, you know, we accused Trump of saying the quiet part out loud, but even Biden said it. You know, if there was no Israel, we would have created one. We've had to create one. Why? Because of the resources that are there that we want to control.
Why have, I get it. Governments are always going to do that, you know? You're never going to convince me that people who go into government, at least the majority of them, go into government because they are altruistic and they want to help and do things for the good of the people. Bull crap. I get the fact that there are people in the government who are bad people. Politicians are just naturally corrupt, I think. Get it. But why has the media, why have the other institutions, why have members of your group, people in the military, sold out? I see them on CNN. I see Petraeus and his ilk all the time. Doing not the Lord's work, not doing the people's work. They're doing the work of these big, giant companies that promote the wars and make the weapons for these wars. That's the part that really bothers me. How do we get to that point?
Wow, Rick, what a great question. And that is what breaks my heart right now. You know, the job that I had in the last 10 years of my life was an advisor to general officers. Help young colonels you mentioned earlier, colonels, you know, become general officers. I was an advisor to them. And I got to know a lot of general officers, close and personal, to include one of my bosses was General Dick Myers, who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during the Afghanistan and Iraq wars. And I must tell you, Rick, it breaks my heart. But once again, it's about money. They go to the Boeings of the world, the Raytheons of the world, you know, they become members of the board, consultants. You know, I talked to a former four-star boss of mine. They're paid large sums of money just to give advice. They're paid large sums of money because of the fact as them being general officers, they had aides, they had executive officers who worked for them, young commanders who worked for them, who went on to be the chiefs of staff for their particular services. And guess what? They have contact with them to steer certain contracts, to steer weapon systems to them. And they make a large amount of money. And it breaks my heart because, you know what, Rick? I respected a lot of those folks when I was in the military.
Yeah.
And now when I see them, like you say, on the CNNs and the Foxes and the MSNBCs, you know, talking about, well, here's the strategy, how we go to war, here's how I'm going to win it. And you know what really breaks my heart, Rick, is that do they realize they're the betrayer? Many young men and women are going to die in those wars. And that's why I call that book Deadly Betrayal, because 4,500 men and women died in an Iraq war based on a WMD lie.
And you know what's funny? As an American, this bothers me. I mean, obviously, when I go to a football game with my wife or my kids, and we love going to watch the Miami Dolphins play or the University of Miami, who, by the way, is about to play in the national championship against Indiana. It's great. I'm excited, and I'm glad to see the Star Spangled Banner and the national anthem, and you know it's fine to have some troops come out and you know and hold Old Glory. And as an American, it makes me feel good. But it goes overboard sometimes. When I see the whole thing is about a military show and then the planes, I have no idea how much it costs to have F-16s go over every damn stadium in the United States every time there's a football game, but I bet you it's a lot of money. It seems to me like they're simply pushing militarism on the public when they don't necessarily need to. Not to mention the fact that we spend more on our military than any country in the history of the world. And every third Thursday, I get a call at my house from somebody asking me to give money to wounded vets. And I'm like, wait a minute, why are you asking me for money?
Rick, don't get me too excited. Another role I played, listen, before we went into the Iraq War, I grew up in a military town in Fayetteville, North Carolina,
yeah,
called Fort Bragg, once Fort Liberty, yeah, back to Fort Bragg, you know that story. And I watched the military men and women that came back wounded and injured for life. And when we got ready to go to the Iraq War, I went to my former boss, General Myers at the time, and the current boss I had at Joint Base Andrews, and said, listen, if these folks come back wounded and injured, at the time, I didn't know if the war was based on lies, but I felt it was. Mm-hmm. I said, we better take care of them. So when I retired out of protest, I got a call from one of my former bosses and said, we know how you feel about the war wounded and us taking care of them.
Yeah.
And so I became eventually the actual contracted wounded warrior program manager for all our wounded warriors coming back. And I could tell you, we sent them off the war, but we don't take care of them when they come back.
Right.
They actually have to fight for their benefits, Rick. Listen to me good. They have to fight for their benefits. Been wounded in a war based on lies. So you just hit a nerve when you said that. And let me just go back and say something else you mentioned too. As a military man, 28 years of my life. When you talk about the rhetoric, you know, the F-16s, F-22s flying above the stadium, the helicopters and so forth. Well, listen. Many of us in the military, former military, are tired of saying, here, thank you for your service. That is a canned statement. Just, you know, it don't even mean anything to us no more, because I don't want to break your heart even if you say it because you mean well, but that is something that's drummed so that we, you know, we in the military, and once again, this is a fact, war is a racket. We in the military are used as pawns in these wars.
Mm.
Another fact, because I want to tell you something, Rick. I spent half my life in the Pentagon, and most of these wars that we're, well, I got to say, all of the wars have never been about the defense of the United States of America or defense of the world, freedom of the world. It has never been about that. And we in the military has been used as pawns in these imperialistic goals.
To make money to make money for other people, and they're rarely. I got to tell you right now, let's talk about Iran. It's in the news. It looks like we're about to hit Iran again. Iran is not an existential threat to the United States of America. It is not. It is not.
Zero. Zero. Iraq, Syria, zero. But, Rick, let me just interrupt you. Iran, I saw the playbook. I called myself the poor man Daniel Ellsberg. You know, that's why I wrote my book, but I did. I call myself a poor man, Daniel Ellsberg, for your audience. He released the Pentagon Papers. I had access to all that, but I did it the right way. You know, I had a Pentagon review before I wrote my book. But let me just tell you, Iran is part of the Middle East plan. It is the final stage. Iraq was first, Syria was second, and Iran was last. Now, as you saw in previous encounters with Iran, we're scared of them. They have ballistic missiles.
Mm-hmm.
And we're afraid of those ballistic missiles. That's why Trump and the neocons got rid of the JCPOA, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which is known as the nuclear deal, is because of the fact they wanted to include those ballistic missiles. Well, Iran said, no, we're not going to do that because that's our line of defense to keep you from truly attacking us and taking us out like you did Assad in Syria and Saddam in Iraq. Well, listen, we're scared of those ballistic missiles. So now part of this plan is part of the playbook going all the way back to the Iraq War. Iran is the last stage of that. And because of those ballistic missiles and how large Iran is, we said we were going to do it. You ready for this? That's why I was so impressed with your monologue. We said we would take them out with internal unrest.
Mm.
And the playbook is playing out. And let me just give you another, Rick, and that is a fact. That is the playbook to take out, and it all ties into the Palestinian thing, too, as well.
Mm.
The Iraq War, the old resources were part of it. It was part of a plan ending with Iran to take out all Palestinian support so that Israel could take over, guess what, that territory, which they want. And remember, said Trump says the quiet part out loud to make it a glorious and probably a nice, nice place for another building for Trump to put his name on it, some beautiful resort. That wow. is part of the plan, to take out now Iran, which, you know, it started, they were bragging about, we took out Hezbollah, we're taking out Hamas. It's all part of the original plan. It crossed both parties in the United States of America. And we sell it to the world, to your audience, by way we're doing it for freedom and peace. And we're probably the biggest terrorists in the world.
Pompeo just said it. I just showed you that headline. The Jerusalem Post has a headline that just came out within the last 24 hours that says that Pompeo put out a tweet. I guess we could find the tweet. I wasn't able to find it, but I trust the reporting because they're not the only source, that Pompeo's been bragging about the fact that the Mossad is inside Iran, infiltrated these protests, and they're the ones causing this. There it is. I'm putting it up for people to see right now. I mean, can you believe this? Maybe he doesn't remember, but he was a former CIA director.
Well, he knows the playbook. That's what I'm telling you. Yeah, this is the takeover of the Middle East. This is the playbook. This is the final stage that before trying to go to war, because it will be a nasty war, because as I stated earlier, Iran have ballistic missiles. They're accurate and they're very powerful. They're not rockets like Hamas and Hezbollah. They're ballistic missiles that can destroy a lot. And so the playbook is to try to take out Iran and the Ayatollah by way of civil internal unrest, and it is happening before our eyes.
You know, it's interesting because this is a playbook we know very well. Guys like you and I who are old enough to remember have seen this throughout Latin America. You know, Guatemala, 1954, when we basically removed the president through civil unrest and then suddenly started a civil war. More than 100,000 people died in that. Same thing in Iran back around 1955 with Mossad. We did it in 2014. NATO did the same thing in Ukraine. They fomented a coup d'etat to remove the...
And don't forget Libya.
And we did it in Libya. So, I mean, this is a playbook that is repeated over and over again. You would think somebody over at Fox News or CNN or one of those places, the New York Times maybe, the Washington Post, would be smart enough to look at this in hindsight and said, wait a minute, I know what you're doing. I'm going to report that. But they don't.
Well, Rick, it goes back, unfortunately. You know, you've heard this thing, you know, money is the root of all evil. But listen, think about what's happening now. As I tell folks, most people in the world will not have known. I've known for decades what was going on in Palestine and in Gaza. If it wasn't for social media, most of the world would not know what was going on. Ready for this? I'm going to call it that, but that's what it is, a genocide. Most people would not have known if it wasn't for social media, if it wasn't for TikTok, if you will. Now, how does this tie in? Why do you think there are certain folks that are trying to buy up TikTok? They bought up CBS News, which I will be boycotting. It's because of the fact they changed the narrative. They are scared of the people who are being awakened. You know, it's a nasty word here in the United States of being woke. No, that's a positive word. We in the United States and the world are being woke to what's been going on for decades.
Yeah. It's funny because it's coming more. I'm surprised because, you know, I was always more liberal than I was conservative. Of late, I've thought there's no such thing. They're both full of crap in many ways. And I don't go with labels and I don't go with parties. But I have seen more people coming out of the MAGA movement and have been impressed by it. They're the ones who are standing up and saying, no, you said you were going to be America first. We're not being America first, and we're going to stand up against you now. I like that.
When you mentioned about politics, you know, I'm in the middle because both parties in the United States are corrupt. But I became Tucker Carlson and Marjorie Taylor Greene fan because of the fact they put it out there. And I think that's going to be the thing to bring particularly the United States closer together and maybe changing this. And I'm giving you a classic example here in the States. I just look at the mayor of New York City. When you talk about boldness, when he stood out there during the debate for the mayor of New York City, and they said, well, where's going to be your first trip? Oh, my first trip is going to be to Israel. He was strong. He was, I think he was polling at 0 point something percent. He said, what? How? I'm staying right here in New York City to take care of the people. Why am I running to Israel? Look where he is now. Mm. You're going to see more people reaching out to me now. You're going to see more people that are going to be bolder now. It took that one person. It always takes one person. The Mandelas of the world, the Martin Luther Kings of the world. It always takes one person, unfortunately, for people to be bold. And I'll tell you, you know, here in the States, that's going to be one of the questions I'm going to be asking. Hey, you know, are you about peace and diplomacy or are you about war? The world should be about peace and diplomacy. That's what we should be leading. But if you think about it, we in the United States, we're involved in more wars than anybody on this planet.
Yeah. And the real question, you're right, is what are you doing for me? Right now, your sons and daughter, my sons and daughter, they have a tough time getting housing in the United States. I mean, you don't graduate from school even after 4, 5, 10 years, and you're able to afford a mortgage anymore. You can't because it's impossible. Rent is, over the top. I mean, these are the things that our politicians should be concerned about, not what the benefits are for Ukrainians or Israelis or Egyptians or any other damn country.
Or anybody, you know, it's almost like, Rick, I try to make people let it hit at home. You talked about your kids, my kids. I'm going to take care of my family first,
yeah.
America's first, and then I will go out there. I want peace on earth. I want to help others, but you're going to, in order to help others, you got to help home first. I'm going to help my home first.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to go out there and help others. But no, our leaders, but I got to tell you, Rick, this is the most optimistic I've ever been. The world is being woke right now, and we are being woke. And I do, Rick, I do have some optimism that we're going to see change in the future. And you know why? It's because of the fact it's the young people that are being woke and seeing this. And it's always young folks that always change it. You know, Mandela's in his 30s. Martin Luther King was in his 30s. You know, you see the young folks. A guy, I think you know him. I think he's been on your show. One of my best friends in the world, Colonel Larry Wilkerson, former... Yeah. Chief of Staff to Colin Powell, we went to Columbia University over the summer. I got to tell you, I was so impressed with those young folks. And so I do see some optimism, but right now, and I got to tell you, we in the United States, our leaders who've been bought and paid for, and those that you mentioned in Europe, they're running scared right now, you know, because of the fact they're seeing the world change right before their eyes. And I got to tell you, when they talk about the U.S. being the leader of the world, that change is going to have to start here first.
I agree.
And then it would make its way around the world because we're leading all this craziness in the world.
Let's finish up with your expertise. So in your book and through your writings and through your speeches, you talk about the Middle East specifically. So let's address these conflagrations that we've seen in our lifetime, because what bothers me about these, Iraq, for example, something you're an expert on, is we went in there with... a plan to try and, I guess, liberate the Iraqis. And we got our butts kicked, if anything, and totally destabilized the region as a result. We went into Afghanistan and we sat there for 20 years and did absolutely zilcho, nothing that we got out of it, except a lot of people got really rich. I could say the same thing about Syria. I could say the same thing about Yemen. I could say the same thing about Libya, for example. So now let's look at Iran. We go into Iran. What are we planning to do? Is it another opportunity for just a lot of people to make a lot of money and continue an endless war for the next 10 years? Is that the plan? Is that the best you think we're going to be able to do? Or what do you think is going to happen, Chief?
I think if we decide to go in Iran, if you thought Iraq was bad, it will be doubly bad if we try to go into Iran. And that's another thing you can take to the bank as well, because there will be a lot of death and destruction. But let me just mention this, Rick. When we talk about the Middle East, the first priority, which a lot of people don't understand, is that the first priority in order to get to the resources is control. And as I go back to remarks that Biden said previously, that if there was no Israel, we would have to create it. That is about control of the Middle East and those resources. So in order to do that, the wars in Iraq, this takedown of Assad in Syria, and now Iran, is about giving Israel that control of that part of the world as part of the colonialism. And so that's the first thing we must understand. So it's a playbook to actually take over the Middle East for those resources and Israel. And then guess what? The oligarchs all get rich. All get rich. And it goes back to what you said earlier. The common person, your children, my children, trying to buy a home. I got a daughter right now that's trying to buy a home.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at it. Or how about here locally, more locally here in the United States, when you talk about, you know, education, you know, how much education is costing us. And so we in the United States are spending literally, back again, trillions of dollars. When you talk about a few minutes ago, we spend more on defense than any other country in the world. It's getting ready to grow again with Trump's budget, you know, that he just proposed. It's great to go up again. And what is it about? It's about control.
It seems to me the last time we had this type of, this situation between, I'm not sure I can call it a war because it didn't last very long, but whatever it was where we bombed Iran and Israel bombed Iran and then Iran bombed Israel, it seemed like that thing ended quickly because it was Israel who screamed uncle. They're the ones who wanted this thing to stop. So I'm thinking that tells me, I'm not a military expert, I don't know much about missiles, but I know enough to know that when one guy says, I give up, that means the other guy's tough.
Let me tell you something.
Go ahead.
Let me tell you something, Rick. What you don't know is that there was more damage than Israel than was released. And if it wasn't for us and some European countries, and be quite frank with you, even Jordan and Egypt, there's a possibility that Israel would have been destroyed. They are nothing without the United States of America. And that is why, you know, I got to tell you why I've become so outspoken, Rick, is that we in the United States of America, every citizen, we are complicit in what was going on in Gaza. We are complicit when we bomb Iran. And like you said, let me just mention something else, too. When I say all based on the lie, we now know, I knew it all along, Israel, Iraq did not have no WMD. Lie. They basically had to go into Syria because of chemical weapons. They say we have to go into Iran because of nuclear weapons. Lie. It's all about lies. Now, with that said, yes, you're exactly right. Israel cried uncle because they were being hit. It was the first time they have been hit so badly. And so they cried uncle so they could. It wasn't about, well, we want to give Iran a chance. No, we ran. And the only way you're going to take out Iran is going to be a major dirty war. And Israel will take some hits. You take that to the bank.
Yeah. Yeah, this could get ugly. This will be very different. And let's hope it doesn't happen. Let's hope.
We are hoping and praying it doesn't happen. Because let me just mention one other thing, Rick, because when I said I got in this crusade because of the 4,500 military men and women who were killed and thousands that was wounded for life, I always got to remind myself, too, of the thousands of Iraqis that have died, the thousands of Syrians that have died. And most lately, unfortunately, all the killings that have taken place in Gaza. I mean, that is insane, Rick. You know, this is about humaneness, you know, and that's why I want to come on your show when you talk about the mainstream media shows that you were MSNBC, CNN, who you were with in the past, in the Fox News. They don't tell the truth. You know, we're talking about lives that are being lost, humaneness, children that are being killed.
Yeah.
If we don't want to stop that, shame on us.
Shame on us indeed. Chief, you are a delight to talk to. If anybody wants to get a hold of you or reach out to you or help you in any way, how could they do that?
Well, I'm part of an organization called the Eisenhower Media Network. And you can go to www.eisenhowermedianetwork.org. And you can reach me and others like Larry Wilkerson. I don't know if you know about this name, but he's with us also, Anthony Allegar. He's with us as well, who was the contract person that was in Gaza, who first came out and said, hey, look, we're killing people over here.
Yes.
And, you know, we're forcing them coming to this to get this nutritional food, but yet we're killing them before they can even get it there. You know, so
we're
living in a crazy world, Rick.
I watched his interview, and it's great to have brave people like you who have the intestinal fortitude to come out and say the things that need to be said. And we appreciate you. Thank you so much for being part of our show.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
Thank you, Chief. Well, thousands of you have commented on X and on YouTube regarding our coverage of Greenland, as you might suspect. People are talking about this all over the world, and it's no different for those of you reaching out to us. So let me share a sampling of some of the comments that you've been making to us. Dida Jr. says, Europe created this monster. Now it's gone mad. The monster. Yep. Kenneth Musto says, what goes around comes around. May NATO's life be interesting. Oh, it will be, Mr. Musto. It will be. And then Genzing Zag says, colonialism has never ended. Rules-based order, the U.S. Empire's rules for the world, those are things which the U.S. does not abide by. As usual, all the feedback is appreciated from you. It doesn't matter, by the way, whether you criticize me or have a disagreement on what we say here. In fact, we'd like for you to share your opinion so we can share them with others. And I read almost everything that you write on YouTube. And you can also check me out on Journalistically Speaking. That is my podcast that you can find as well. And on X at Rick Sanchez TV. Thanks so much for being with us. Thank you for letting us into your homes. And we'll be looking for you next time. I'm Rick Sanchez. We'll see you again.